Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're gonna need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100 count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Apúrate que se acaban las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's. Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. Y como la Navidad ya se siente, ahorra $4 en luces LED de 100 bombillas en hilera GE. Ahora solo $5.98. Lowe's, nosotros ayudamos, tú ahorras. Válido hasta 12/3, selección varía por tienda, solo en tiendas selectas, hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
Okay. Let's dive deep into something that has, well, profoundly shifted strategic thinking in just the last few weeks. I'm talking about the absolutely audacious June 2025 drone strike on Russian airfields. I mean, just the scale of it alone was breathtaking, hitting targets spanning nearly 5,000 kilometers. We're talking from the western edges of Russia, deep, deep into the Urals.
Yeah, it's hard to even picture that distance. Operationally.
And these weren't minor targets. We're talking critical assets, strategic bombers, those invaluable A-50 early warning planes.
The crown jewels, really, of their long-range aviation and surveillance.
The impact was, well, devastating. Sources report 41 aircraft hit across multiple bases, 10 of them utterly destroyed, and an estimated, what, $7 billion in damage?
$7 billion in a single night. It's a number that's hard to grasp.
The sheer audacity, I keep coming back to that word, the reach, the precision. Hitting targets that deep, it was just unprecedented.
Absolutely. And it wasn't just a random attack. It had structure.
Right. The sources mention a specific operational code name, Spiderweb, and this remarkable tactic they employed known as Trojan Trucks. We'll definitely need to unpack that.
We will. Okay. And what's truly fascinating, as the sources you've shared make crystal clear, is that this wasn't just, you know, a bigger version of previous drone attacks. This was different. It was an operation fundamentally enabled by really advanced tactics and, crucially, artificial intelligence.
AI is the key here.
It really is. It represents a significant leap forward, maybe even revolutionary in some ways, for modern warfare.
And that's precisely our mission for this deep dive today. We're going to unpack how Ukraine managed this incredible feat. We'll be focusing specifically on the absolutely central role AI played, not just as a component, but as the core enabler.
Right.
We'll explore how this builds on Ukraine's wartime innovation, which has been, frankly, remarkable, how it serves as a prime example of asymmetric warfare in the 21st century. And of course, the major ripple effects this event is already having globally. Big ones.
There are definitely ripples.
And just to be clear for everyone listening, everything we discuss today will be drawn directly from the source material provided for this analysis.
Yes, let's stick to the details in the sources to really understand this complex and, well, game-changing event.
Okay, so let's start with the event itself. Lay it out for us. The scale, the targets, the impact. What exactly happened in June 2025?
So the sources describe a highly coordinated, simultaneous, long-range drone strike. And the key word there is simultaneous. It hit multiple Russian air bases deep inside the country, all on the same night.
Not spread out over hours, then? A concentrated punch.
Exactly. It wasn't a rolling wave. It was designed for near simultaneous impact across all targets. Maximum shock.
And as you mentioned, these weren't just any old targets or, you know, empty runways they were hitting.
Absolutely not. The sources are very specific about the high-value assets that were struck. We're talking about Russia's strategic bomber fleet. The 295s, the 222M3.
The bears and the backfires.
Precisely. These are critical components of Russia's long-range aviation capability. Some are nuclear capable.
A huge deal.
A huge deal. Additionally, the strategically vital A-50 airborne early warning and control aircraft, their version of AWACS, was also targeted. The reported results, as you said, were staggering. 41 aircraft damaged or destroyed across 5 airfields, with 10 confirmed completely destroyed.
And that $7 billion figure.
That's the estimated financial cost to Russia, according to these sources.
Yeah.
Around $7 billion. I mean, just to put that in perspective for listeners, that's roughly the annual defense budget of a medium-sized European country. Gone. Overnight.
Wow. And it wasn't just the type of targets, but their location that was so incredibly striking. These bases were so far from Ukrainian territory.
That's perhaps the most baffling initial detail for many observers, yes.
Yeah.
The sources really emphasize the unprecedented reach. Hitting airfields distributed over an area stretching almost 5,000 kilometers, it's vast.
5,000 kilometers.
They specifically cite the example of the Belaya Air Base, which is near Irkutsk.
Way out east. Siberia, basically.
It's exactly. Over 4,500 kilometers from Ukraine's borders. Now, this distance, it just far exceeds the known range of any traditional long-range missiles Ukraine possesses. And it certainly exceeds the operational range of most of their commonly used drones if they were flying directly from government-controlled territory. It just wasn't possible that way.
So something else had to be going on, and this wasn't just, you know, a lucky hit. It had a formal operation name, a signature tactic.
Yes. The sources identified this specific operation by the code name Operation Spiderweb.
Apt, given the reach?
It reflects its widespread, distributed nature, yes. And the key tactic used for the deployment, the delivery method, was dubbed Trojan trucks.
Trojan trucks. We'll definitely circle back to that.
These terms are now firmly linked to this event in all the analysis we're seeing.
What's absolutely critical to understand, based on the sources, is how Ukraine pulled this off. They didn't achieve this through, you know, overwhelming force or suddenly getting a massive influx of Allied long-range weapons. They simply don't have those in the quantity or, crucially, the range needed for targets this deep.
Right, that's not how it happened.
Instead, the sources explicitly state they harnessed bold, highly innovative tactics and, crucially, AI artificial intelligence. That's how they overcame Russia's significant advantages in sheer numbers, geographical distance, and presumably layered air defenses.
It's the ingenuity, isn't it? Leveraging technology and clever strategy to completely negate those traditional disadvantages. That's what makes this strike potentially a real watershed moment.
Okay, that perfectly sets the stage. The scale, the audacity, the context. Now let's dive into the absolute heart of how this was even possible. The sources are incredibly clear. Artificial intelligence wasn't just involved, it was central, absolutely central. Let's unpack AI's critical role here in both the targeting and the navigation of these drones.
Okay, so precision was absolutely paramount in this strike, and that's exactly where AI provided a capability that, frankly, just wasn't present in earlier, less successful deep attacks Ukraine had attempted.
Right, those earlier ones had more modest results.
They did. This wasn't about just hitting a large geographic area, like an airfield generally. The objective here was to find and destroy specific high-value aircraft parked on those airfields.
Pinpoint accuracy needed.
Exactly. And the sources detail how Ukraine's security service, the SBU, developed and trained sophisticated machine learning models. These models were trained specifically to recognize the exact visual profile of different types of Russian military aircraft.
And there's that remarkable detail about how they actually trained this AI vision system. It wasn't exactly conventional.
No, it's quite an anecdote in the sources. Really illustrates the resourcefulness involved.
Yeah.
They mentioned that operators actually used, get this, Soviet-era bomber exhibits at the Poltava Strategic Aviation Museum.
A museum.
A museum. To train these AI vision algorithms on target identification. Imagine training an AI to recognize a modern 295 bomber by feeding it images and data from its decades-old ancestors sitting static in a museum exhibit.
That is incredible. A perfect example of wartime adaptation, using literally whatever resources are available. So what was the practical outcome of training the AI like that?
Well, the result was that each drone, once it got into the vicinity of a target airbase after its long journey, could essentially see and positively identify specific aircraft types on the ground.
It knew what it was looking for.
It knew what it was looking for. And it was more than just identification. The AI could pinpoint the exact location of that target aircraft on the tarmac, and crucially could optimize the attack angle to hit the most vulnerable parts of the plane.
Not just hitting the plane, but hitting it where it hurts most.
Precisely. Targeting fuel tanks, maybe the cockpit area,
yep.
Engine nacelles, areas that would maximize the chance of catastrophic destruction, not just superficial shrapnel damage.
And achieving that level of pinpoint accuracy on specific weak points.
Especially with a small, fast-moving drone, maybe buffeted by winds after a very long flight. That's incredibly difficult for a remote human pilot relying on a shaky video feed.
Or impossible for unguided munitions.
Absolutely. The AI provided that crucial final mile precision, that terminal guidance capability that made the difference between damaging an aircraft and destroying it.
So AI handled the what to hit and where exactly on the target to hit it with remarkable accuracy. But AI also played a vital role in simply getting the drones to those targets in the first place, especially considering the hostile environment they were flying through.
Exactly. Navigation was the other absolutely critical piece enabled by AI. AI-driven guidance systems were essential, especially operating thousands of kilometers behind enemy lines in an environment just saturated with Russian electronic warfare, or EW.
GPS jamming would be intense.
Constant. Russia actively jams GPS signals. It's a standard defensive measure. And traditional drone navigation relies very heavily on GPS. So the sources explain that these drones utilize something called visual inertial navigation, VIN-S.
Okay, break that down. How does VIN-S work?
It means they combine data from internal sensors, inertial measurement units, or IMUs, which track movement and rotation like the sensors in your smartphone, with input from onboard cameras, and potentially LiDAR as well.
LiDAR? Like in self-driving cars?
Similar principle, yeah. Light detection and ranging. It uses laser pulses to map the surroundings in 3D.
So they weren't just blindly following GPS coordinates that could be jammed or spoofed.
Exactly. By using the cameras, and possibly LiDAR, the drones could actively map their environment in real time. They could compare what they saw to preloaded maps, or identify distinct visual features on the ground, rivers, roads, buildings, to stay on course and verify their location independently of GPS.
That makes them much more resilient to jamming.
Hugely. It's vital. It allows navigation to continue even when GPS signals are completely denied or being actively manipulated, which is a major weakness of many earlier long-range drone systems. And the sources detail how pre-trained neural networks running on the drone's onboard processors analyze this camera feed in real time.
So the AI is constantly processing the visual input.
Constantly. This allowed them to continuously adjust their flight path, identify key landmarks for navigation confirmation, and then, crucially, lock onto their designated targets once they got close. Whether it was that specific bomber they were assigned to hit, or maybe a critical piece of base infrastructure like a fuel depot, they could find it and lock on without needing constant commands from a human operator during that final, most dangerous phase of the approach.
It sounds like a really advanced form of self-guidance, much more than just a simple autopilot.
Oh, much more. We're not just talking about maintaining a heading and altitude. The machine learning models enabled complex, autonomous functions. This included things like navigating difficult terrain or flying around unexpected obstacles, dynamically adjusting their path to avoid detection if possible, and performing what's called terminal homing.
Terminal homing.
That means locking onto the specific target they were programmed to hit that 295, for instance, and guiding themselves directly onto it for the final impact.
All without human intervention in those last moments.
Potentially, yes. This level of autonomy is key because it allows the drones to bypass jamming that might cut off command signals from a remote operator. And it eliminates human reaction delays in those critical final seconds before impact, when things are happening incredibly fast. The sources even use this interesting term, autopilot plus A, to describe this capability.
Autopilot plus.
Yeah, signifying that it goes beyond basic autopilot. It implies the drone's ability to autonomously acquire and home in on its intended aircraft target once it's within sensing range of the airfield. This dramatically increases the likelihood of a successful strike, even if the drone is under electronic attack or facing other defensive measures.
Okay, so pulling that together, AI was essentially the brain for both precise identification and lethal engagement on the target itself. And it was the eyes and the navigation system that could find its way across vast distances and lock onto the target, even when traditional methods like GPS were being actively denied.
That's a great summary. It's clear the AI wasn't just some add-on feature here. It was absolutely fundamental to the mission's success at every critical stage.
It seems like it transformed these drones from potentially inaccurate, easily disrupted systems into precise, resilient, and lethally effective instruments, capable of operating largely independently deep inside heavily contested airspace.
Precisely. It's a step change in capability.
All right, so the AI makes the drones smart, precise, and resilient. But how on earth do you get over 100 of these smart drones thousands of kilometers behind enemy lines and launch them simultaneously across multiple locations? That brings us to the sophisticated logistics, the mission coordination, and this now infamous Trojan trucks tactic.
This is where the strategic creativity and, frankly, sheer boldness of the operation really come into focus, according to the sources. Mm-hmm. The core problem was undeniable, as we discussed. Ukraine simply doesn't possess a drone that can take off from, say, Kyiv, fly 4,500 kilometers on its own internal fuel, evade multiple layers of Russian air defense all the way, and then precisely hit a target near Irkutsk.
So a direct flight from Ukrainian territory was basically impossible.
Correct. That wasn't the plan. The solution the SBU reportedly came up with was infiltration. Clandestine infiltration, executed methodically over a very long period.
How long are we talking?
The sources indicate this operation was prepared over approximately 18 months.
18 months. Wow.
Yeah. The strategy involved covertly smuggling the drones, likely disassembled, and their components, along with the human operators who would assemble and launch them, into Russia, piece by piece.
Smuggling them into Russia.
That's what the sources state. These components were then reportedly transported and assembled at clandestine safe houses located much closer to the target air bases, deep inside Russian territory. Allegedly, some as far away as the Urals region, putting them within much shorter striking distance of those eastern bases.
Assembling spy drones right under the noses of the Russian security services, that is audacious.
It certainly seems that way, based on the available reporting.
Yeah.
And then came the ingenious deployment method itself, these concealed launch platforms, the Trojan trucks.
Okay, tell us about these trucks.
The SBU apparently constructed custom-built launch systems hidden inside very ordinary-looking civilian trucks. The sources describe them as standard flatbed trucks, the kind you see everywhere, but fitted with specially built mock cargo cabins on the back.
But they weren't carrying cargo.
No. These cabins weren't carrying furniture or produce. They were concealing multiple disassembled FPV drones, ready to be quickly assembled and launched.
FPV drones, first-person view.
That's right, first-person view. It refers to the camera on the front of the drone that transmits a live video feedback to the operator, often wearing goggles, allowing for very precise, real-time maneuvering. These are often smaller, agile drones.
So the trucks acted like mobile, completely hidden launch sites, like something out of a spy movie.
Exactly like that. The plan, as described, involved agents driving these innocent-looking trucks to pre-selected launch sites. These sites were strategically chosen to be very close to the target air bases, often just a few kilometers away, maybe hidden in a wooded area or an industrial zone nearby.
Right on the doorstep.
Practically. Then, at the designated synchronized time for the attack, the roofs of these concealed truck cabins would be opened remotely, and the drones, likely assembled just before the launch window, would be launched in quick succession from right there, within very short range of the parked aircraft they were meant to destroy.
Wow. And I think the sources mentioned something about erasing the evidence afterwards.
Yes, an added layer of operational security mentioned is that the truck pods, the launch cabins themselves, were designed to self-destruct after the drones were away.
Destroying a launch platform.
Right. This would help erase evidence of the exact launch point, making it much harder for Russian investigators to figure out where the attack originated from on the ground and track down the network involved.
Okay, now explain how launching drones from trucks parked just a few kilometers away helped them bypass Russia's extensive layered air defenses. That seems key.
This is the tactical brilliance of the Trojan truck approach.
Yeah.
Russia has sophisticated radar systems and surface-to-air missile batteries, SAMs, designed to detect threats flying hundreds, even thousands of kilometers towards their protected sites.
Standard air defense doctrine.
Right. But these systems are primarily optimized to spot incoming objects at longer ranges and often higher altitudes. They're looking for missiles, bombers, larger drones coming from afar. By launching these relatively small FPV drones just a few kilometers from the target airfield, the drones appeared at extremely low altitude and were on top of their targets within moments, maybe just a minute or two of flight time.
Giving the defenses almost no warning.
Precisely. Russian radar simply had almost no time to detect, track, and engage. And SAM systems designed for intercepting targets further out were effectively bypassed because these threats just popped up virtually on top of the base, below the optimal engagement envelope for many systems.
Incredible tactical surprise.
Absolutely. But beyond the individual launches, just think about the coordination challenge here. We're talking about launching 117 drones, reportedly.
117.
Simultaneously, or near simultaneously, targeting five separate airfields spread across three different time zones within Russia. That is a monumental logistical and command and control challenge.
It sounds like a logistical nightmare for a human team to manage alone, especially under pressure. How could that possibly be orchestrated?
Well, the sources state that Ukrainian commanders sitting in Kyiv, nearly 5,000 kilometers away from some of the targets, remember, oversaw the entire operation.
From Kyiv.
From Kyiv. They managed this through a secure, presumably encrypted, network. Now, given the sheer scale and the absolute necessity for precise simultaneity, it's considered highly likely, based on the analysis, that they used an AI-enhanced mission control system.
AI helping coordinate the coordinators.
You could put it that way. Such a system would be almost indispensable for synchronizing the flight paths, managing the precise launch timings from potentially dozens of different truck locations scattered across Russia, and ensuring all 117 drones arrived at their respective targets within a very tight coordinated window to maximize shock and overwhelm defenses.
So the goal wasn't just to hit the bases, but to hit them all effectively at the exact same moment.
Yes, that seems to be the core strategy. Achieve tactical surprise through mass simultaneity. By hitting all five airfields at roughly the same time, Russia's air defense network couldn't react effectively. They couldn't, say, detect the attack on the first base and then quickly scramble interceptors or fully activate jamming systems or reposition mobile SAM units to protect the other bases before those attacks also landed.
You overload their decision-making loop.
Exactly. It was essentially a widespread, distributed saturation attack, overwhelming the defender's ability to respond coherently across multiple points at once. This level of orchestration, coordinating multiple groups of drones hitting targets thousands of kilometers apart simultaneously, is actually a sophisticated form of distributed drone swarm attack.
Even if they weren't all flying in one big cloud.
Right. It's not a single swarm, but the coordination challenge is similar, arguably even harder given the distances. It requires incredibly precise timing and management, which is extremely difficult, maybe impossible, to achieve reliably without advanced software assistance.
And AI algorithms likely played a role in that synchronization and planning.
The sources strongly suggest that AI algorithms likely played a key role in both the mission planning phase and the execution oversight. This could involve analyzing optimal flight routes from each hidden launch point to the target base, calculating the exact required launch time from each individual truck to ensure that near simultaneous arrival time across different time zones, selecting optimal altitudes for the final approach to maximize stealth, and managing the overall flow of the attack to minimize the risk of friendly drones interfering with each other, things like collisions or signal conflicts.
That sounds like processing a massive amount of data in real time.
Exactly. It requires processing vast amounts of dynamic data and performing complex calculations extremely quickly, arguably beyond the capacity of a purely human command team under such pressure.
Now, even with all this automation and AI assistance, was there still human involvement in the loop for the actual attack?
Yes, and this is a really significant point highlighted in the sources, especially in the broader conversation about autonomous weapons. They explicitly clarify that each drone still had a human operator in the loop for oversight.
Okay, so not fully autonomous fire-and-forget weapons.
It appears not for the final decision, based on these reports. The AI and the automated systems likely handled the complex navigation, the timing synchronization, the route planning, and maybe even the initial target acquisition and terminal guidance. Mm. But a human operator was reportedly supervising each individual drone's feed, likely able to intervene, abort the attack, or perhaps positively confirm the target visually right before impact, especially during that final attack sequence.
That's a crucial detail for the ethics discussion later.
It really is. It suggests a model of human-machine teaming rather than full autonomy for lethal action, at least in this instance.
And how were the commanders in Kyiv communicating with these dispersed teams and trucks and potentially the drones over these incredible distances deep inside hostile territory?
The coordination from Kyiv was managed via secure, encrypted communications channels. Now, given the vast distances involved and the absolute need for reliable connectivity deep inside Russia, where local infrastructure might be monitored or unreliable, it's considered highly likely they utilized satellite communication links. Systems like Starlink, perhaps, provided by Western partners.
Starlink has been crucial throughout the conflict.
It has, for communication with the clandestine teams on the ground setting up the launches, and potentially even for receiving initial telemetry or video data back from the drones themselves during the early stages of their short flights, before the onboard AI likely took over for the terminal guidance phase, especially if jamming became intense.
And what about the personnel? The operators who took the immense risk of infiltrating Russia to carry out these launches, were they extracted safely?
The sources note that, remarkably, all Ukrainian personnel involved in setting up the launch points and actually launching the drones were successfully exfiltrated from Russia before the attack actually went live.
They got out before the fireworks started.
Exactly. They were reportedly safely out of the country before the first explosions were reported or any damage assessments began.
Sure.
A clean getaway, it seems. So summing up this absolutely incredible tactical feat, It relied on meticulous, long-term planning involving infiltration over many months, using ordinary-looking trucks modified into covert, mobile launch platforms positioned just kilometers from high-value target air bases. These trucks then deployed swarms of relatively small, agile FPV drones, guided by sophisticated onboard AI that used visual recognition to identify and precisely strike specific components of designated aircraft. And all of this, the timing, the coordination across vast distances and multiple time zones, was orchestrated and synchronized remotely from a sophisticated, likely AI-enhanced command network located thousands of kilometers away back in Kyiv, using secure satellite communications.
It's an astonishingly complex, multi-layered operation. A seamless blend of old-school espionage, tradecraft infiltration, concealment with absolutely cutting-edge digital technology and AI-driven autonomy.
It really is a remarkable combination.
And as the sources rightly highlight, this capability, this level of sophistication, it didn't just appear out of the blue in June 2025. The spiderweb strike is clearly presented as an evolution, building directly on Ukraine's intense pressure cooker experience as a wartime laboratory for AI and drone innovation over the preceding couple of years.
Absolutely. You have to see it in context. The full-scale invasion forced Ukraine to innovate at an absolutely unprecedented pace. It essentially turned the entire conflict into a real-time testing ground and proving ground for military AI applications and novel drone capabilities. The June 2025 strike is a direct, logical outcome of the lessons learned and the technologies developed during that intense period.
So where can we trace the origins of this kind of deep strike AI-guided thinking back to? What were the earlier steps?
We can definitely look back to the earliest attempts Ukraine made at conducting deep strikes. Even back in 2022, they actually managed to hit Russian air bases like Engels and Diaghilevo, which are hundreds of kilometers from the front lines quite early in the war.
I remember those attacks. They caused a stir at the time, but maybe they weren't as surgically precise as this latest one.
Precisely. The sources indicate those early attacks typically used repurposed Soviet-era reconnaissance drones, like the 2-141 Stryze. They were retrofitted with explosives, but used relatively basic, often inertial or satellite-based, conventional guidance systems.
Less sophisticated guidance.
Much less. As a result, the precision was limited. And while they certainly caused concern and embarrassment in Russia, showing Ukraine could reach that far, the actual physical damage to the strategic bombers parked at those bases was often reported as modest. Mostly superficial hits, shrapnel damage.
So they proved the concept of reach, but not necessarily lethality.
Exactly. Those early strikes were a vital proof of concept demonstrating the capability to hit targets deep inside Russia. But they also taught Ukraine a crucial lesson. Sheer range wasn't enough. To achieve a high strategic payoff, to actually degrade Russia's long-range capability significantly, you needed much better targeting. You needed precision.
A lesson clearly applied in the 2025 strike.
Directly applied. The June 2025 operation addressed this lesson head-on by using those AI-trained targeting algorithms to ensure the drones didn't just hit the airfield somewhere, but hit specific aircraft and specific vulnerable points on those aircraft, maximizing the destructive effect. The earlier attacks also probably hinted at the potential power of simultaneity hitting multiple targets at once could complicate Russia's defensive response. That was another lesson seemingly taken to heart and fully exploited in the much larger coordinated spiderweb operation.
And meanwhile, completely separate from these deep strikes back on the actual front lines, Ukraine was becoming incredibly adept at using smaller drones.
Oh, unbelievably rapidly. Throughout 2022 and 2023, Ukraine basically became the world leader in the tactical use of small, often commercially available or locally modified, FPV drones. They didn't just use them for reconnaissance looking over the next hill. They integrated them deeply into the core of their day-to-day combat operations. They developed sophisticated software systems, battle management software, like GIS, ARTA, Copiva, Delta, and others. These platforms could take the live video feeds coming directly from drones flying over the battlefield and integrate that visual intelligence immediately with artillery targeting data, mapping systems, and command networks.
So a drone operator spots a Russian tank.
And that information, its precise location, could be relayed almost instantaneously to the nearest artillery unit via the software, allowing for incredibly rapid fire missions. It dramatically shortened the whole sensor-to-shooter cycle. What used to take minutes, maybe longer through traditional military radio reports and plotting on maps, could now happen in seconds.
That speed must have been a huge advantage.
A massive advantage. And Western technology partnerships also played a significant role here, according to the sources. Companies like Palantir provided Ukraine with advanced AI-driven data analytics platforms. Their MetaConstellation platform, which gets specific mention, was reportedly capable of fusing data from an incredible array of sources: commercial satellite imagery, tactical drone feeds, ground sensors, electronic intercepts, even reports from human intelligence sources on the ground.
Pulling everything together into one picture.
Into one dynamic, real-time operational picture. But it did more than just display data. Crucially, it used powerful algorithms to analyze this fused data, automatically identify patterns, detect enemy movements, and then identify and prioritize potential targets for commanders, often within minutes of the data arriving.
So the AI was actively recommending targets.
Yes, recommending and prioritizing them based on learned patterns and assigned values. That quote you mentioned earlier from the British general really captures the impact.
The 300 targets a day versus 10.
Right. A traditional headquarters might process enough information to identify and maybe target 10 enemy assets in a day. But with these AI-driven tools, Ukrainian headquarters could potentially identify and receive recommendations for 300 targets a day, far more than they even had the weapons to strike. And the software reportedly used machine learning, so it learned for the outcomes of previous strikes, constantly refining its targeting algorithms and predictive models.
That's incredible battlefield learning happening at machine speed.
It is. And by 2023, Ukrainian forces weren't just using AI in centralized HQs. They were incorporating machine learning models for automated target recognition, or ATR, directly into their frontline drone operations. These models could run on tablets or even onboard some drones, analyzing the live video feed from an FPV or reconnaissance drone and automatically detecting things like enemy vehicles, artillery pieces, or concentrations of troops.
Highlighting them for the operator.
Exactly. Flagging them visually on the operator's screen as potential targets, reducing the cognitive load on the human and ensuring targets weren't missed, even in cluttered environments or during long surveillance missions. This widespread experience with using AI for real-time automated target detection and identification right at the tactical edge was absolutely crucial groundwork. It built the skills and the trust needed for more complex missions, like programming drones to autonomously identify specific aircraft types on a distant tarmac. It improved their accuracy dramatically and reduced misses.
We also saw the rise of loitering munitions, these so-called kamikaze drones, being used extensively by both sides. Did AI play a role there too?
Yes, it did, although often in a more rudimentary form initially, especially early on. Both Russia and Ukraine began incorporating basic AI or machine learning components into their loitering munitions to improve terminal accuracy. Russia's Lancet drone, for instance, which has been quite effective, uses onboard image recognition algorithms for its terminal guidance phase.
How does that work?
A human operator typically selects the target from the drone's video feed, but once locked, the drone's AI helps it maintain that lock and guide itself accurately onto that specific target, even if the target is moving slightly, during those final crucial seconds before impact.
And Ukraine developed similar capabilities.
Ukraine rapidly iterated on this concept, particularly with their huge fleet of low-cost FPV drones being adapted for kamikaze roles. They added enhanced autopilots for stability and likely incorporated simple neural networks to help track moving targets, like tanks or vehicles, once they were visually designated by the operator. That automatic dive attack behavior we discussed, observed in the spiderweb strike where the drones autonomously guided themselves onto specific aircraft targets once they were within visual range of the base, that capability likely evolved directly from these earlier innovations with FPV loitering munitions. Each generation helped refine the algorithms and build confidence in the blend of human oversight and machine autonomy for that critical terminal guidance phase, improving reliability strike by strike.
Ukraine also became famous for pushing the boundaries with uncrewed systems in other domains, specifically at sea, right, with their naval drones.
Absolutely. Ukraine became a real pioneer in the operational use of uncrewed surface vessels, or USVs. Their experimental sea drones, often looking like small speedboats packed with explosives, achieved remarkable successes. They successfully struck Russian naval ships docked in the heavily defended port of Sevastopol and even damaged the strategically vital Kerch Bridge multiple times in 2022 and 2023.
Those attacks grabbed headlines worldwide.
They did. Now, those early naval drones were often largely remotely controlled via video link or used relatively simple GPS waypoint navigation. However, they quickly encountered intense electronic jamming from Russian warships and coastal defenses. Signals were lost, GPS was spoofed. This forced Ukraine to rapidly realize a critical need to increase the autonomy and AI capabilities of their USV guidance systems. They needed the drone boats to be able to find and hit their targets, even when command links or GPS signals were completely cut off.
Another example of necessity driving innovation under fire.
Exactly. This hard-won experience developing autonomous navigation systems resilient to heady jamming in the maritime domain was invaluable technical expertise and directly fed into projects within Ukraine's burgeoning defense tech sector, supported by initiatives like the Brave One Technology Cluster. One concept that emerged in 2023, mentioned in the sources, was the Google drone project.
Google?
Yes. It was described conceptually as an AI-powered mother drone, a larger carrier aircraft designed to fly deep into enemy territory and then launch multiple smaller attack drones, extending their effective range far beyond the operator's line of sight.
A drone launching other drones?
Yep.
Flying aircraft carrier, essentially.
In miniature, yes. And the sources mention a specific, highly relevant test that reportedly happened just prior to the June 2025 airbase strike, which seems like a direct precursor. In this test, a larger carrier UAV flew behind enemy lines and released two smaller AI-guided kamikaze drones. Now, crucially, once these smaller drones were released, they autonomously searched a designated area for high-value targets, things like Russian air defense systems or parked aircraft. They used their onboard AI vision systems to do this search, identification, and targeting without relying on GPS and without continuous communication back to a human operator. They found and engaged targets on their own.
That sounds almost identical to the final phase of the spiderweb drones.
It's a direct parallel in terms of the core capability: autonomous search, identification, and attack using onboard AI vision and navigation, independent of external signals. This drone mothership concept, combined with a proven autonomous targeting of the submunitions, clearly demonstrated the technical maturity and built the confidence needed to attempt something like the spiderweb operation. Each successful trial validated the approach.
And it wasn't just about offensive AI either, was it? The sources mentioned Ukraine integrating AI into their air defense systems too.
Correct. And deploying AI successfully in high-stakes defensive roles also provided critical operational know-how and, importantly, built trust in AI systems among Ukrainian military planners and commanders. A key example highlighted is the Sky Sentinel system, unveiled publicly in 2023. This is essentially an AI-powered anti-drone gun turret.
How does it work?
It demonstrates a very high level of autonomy. The system uses sensors and AI algorithms to automatically detect incoming aerial threats, particularly the Iranian Shahed drones Russia uses extensively, but also potentially cruise missiles. It can then automatically track the detected target and even aim its integrated machine gun with minimal human input. Typically, a human operator only needs to grant final authorization to fire.
So the AI does the detection, tracking, and aiming.
Yes, leaving the human with the crucial fire or no fire decision. And it showed impressive early effectiveness.
The sources mentioned its success rate.
Yes. It reportedly shot down 6 Shahed drones in its first 6 engagements. An initially perfect success rate against the challenging target. Fielding systems like Sky Sentinel gave the Ukrainian military critical, first-hand, high-stakes experience in trusting AI algorithms to perform vital, split-second functions reliably in combat. This positive operational experience almost certainly emboldened them to adopt AI more widely and confidently for offensive operations as well. You could argue the success of Sky Sentinel's fire-and-forget engagement concept in air defense, where the system autonomously handles the complex intercept once authorized, likely inspired confidence in applying a similar AI-driven autonomous terminal attack capability to offensive kamikaze drones targeting high-value assets.
That makes sense. Success breeds confidence in the technology.
And this system also highlights Ukraine's unique innovation culture that we touched on earlier. Their remarkable ability to rapidly develop and field homegrown, often cost-effective AI solutions, frequently leveraging readily available commercial components combined with clever software. That same agile startup mentality and deep pool of technical talent were clearly the driving forces behind the complex, ambitious spiderweb operation as well.
Okay, so pulling all these threads together now, the June 2025 strike clearly wasn't some sudden, inexplicable bolt from the blue. It was the culmination, the logical next step, built upon years of intense, accelerated wartime innovation.
Absolutely.
It built directly on the hard lessons learned from those earlier, cruder, less precise deep strikes back in 2022. It leveraged the widespread integration of AI for targeting and situational awareness happening daily on the front lines. It incorporated the advances made in developing autonomous navigation for naval drones and aerial drones operating under heavy jamming conditions. And it benefited from the practical experience and trust gained by successfully fielding AI in critical defensive roles like the Sky Sentinel turret.
Exactly. It's a powerful demonstration of how necessity, when combined with deep technical expertise, strong partnerships, and a national culture that embraces rapid iteration and deployment of new technologies, can lead to exponential leaps in military capability over a relatively short, albeit brutal, period.
This rapid evolution and incredibly effective deployment of AI capabilities leads us directly to a major theme that emerges powerfully from the sources: Ukraine's successful use of AI as a core asymmetric advantage against a numerically and in many ways conventionally superior foe like Russia.
This is perhaps the defining characteristic of Ukraine's military approach in this conflict, at least from a technological standpoint. It's almost become their signature. Facing a much larger adversary with more tanks, more planes, more troops, Ukraine has successfully and strategically leveraged AI, machine learning, sophisticated software, and digital warfare techniques to fundamentally alter the balance of power, at least in specific crucial areas.
It sounds like a textbook case study for 21st century warfare.
It really is. A textbook case study in how asymmetric warfare is being fought right now in the digital age.
What are the specific factors that the sources highlight as contributing to this Ukrainian AI-driven edge? How did they achieve it?
Several key factors really stand out in the analysis. First and foremost is their exceptional tech integration and organizational agility. Unlike many traditional large militaries burdened by slow, bureaucratic procurement cycles, Ukraine has effectively turned its vibrant domestic tech sector into a direct force multiplier for the military.
Bridging the gap between civilian tech and military needs very quickly.
Incredibly quickly. They've partnered very closely and effectively with Western technology firms, both large established players and nimble startups. And they've managed to integrate cutting-edge AI and advanced software directly into military decision-making processes and frontline operations at speeds that were, frankly, previously unimaginable in defense circles.
We keep coming back to Palantir's platform as an example.
Yes. Palantir's MetaConstellation platform is consistently cited in the sources as a prime example of this kind of seamless, impactful integration. As we discussed, it allows Ukraine to rapidly fuse data from this incredibly diverse array of sources: satellites, drones, ground sensors, electronic signals, human intelligence reports, open source intelligence, you name it.
Creating that unified real-time picture.
Exactly. Creating that constantly updated operational picture of enemy movements, locations, and dispositions. But the crucial step is what comes next. It uses powerful algorithms to analyze this deluge of data, identify patterns invisible to the human eye, and then automatically identify and prioritize potential high-value targets for commanders, often within minutes of new intelligence arriving. It recommends where to strike next.
That sounds like it provides just a monumental advantage in terms of speed and actionable intelligence, like fighting blind versus having perfect vision.
It dramatically, fundamentally accelerates the entire kill chain, that process, from initially detecting or identifying a potential target to actually striking it. That quote we mentioned from the British general, identifying 300 potential targets a day versus maybe 10 through traditional methods, that really eliminates the scale of the advantage.
It's a force multiplier.
A massive force multiplier. It gives Ukraine a level of battlefield awareness, targeting efficiency, and reaction speed that directly compensates for Russia's raw numerical superiority in troops and conventional equipment. The CEO of Palantir himself is quoted in the sources making that incredibly powerful, perhaps provocative, comparison we noted earlier.
The one about tactical nuclear weapons.
Yes, describing the impact of these advanced algorithmic warfare systems as being so significant that it's almost akin to having tactical nuclear weapons against an adversary with only conventional ones.
Wow. That's a statement that really makes you stop and think. It suggests AI isn't just another tool. It's fundamentally changing the very equation of military power itself.
It absolutely does. It implies that a smaller, perhaps less traditionally resourced military force, when effectively empowered by sophisticated AI tools for intelligence fusion, precision targeting, and operational coordination, can now potentially inflict damage and achieve strategic effects that were previously only thought possible for much larger, more conventionally powerful militaries with vast arsenals. It really represents a fundamental shift in how we understand and project military power in the 21st century.
Okay, so tech integration and agility is one factor. What else contributes to Ukraine's edge here?
Another critical factor highlighted repeatedly is their remarkable culture of local innovation and their willingness to embrace open source technology and unconventional bottom-up approaches. Ukraine doesn't have the vast, centralized, state-owned defense industrial complex like Russia or the United States. They couldn't rely on that. Instead, they've ingeniously tapped into their deep pre-existing pool of highly skilled IT professionals, software engineers, and tech entrepreneurs.
The digital resistance we heard about early in the war?
Exactly. From the very beginning of the full-scale invasion, you saw this phenomenon. Volunteer coders, civilian engineers, even drone hobbyists forming a sort of digital resistance. They were rapidly developing custom military applications, building bespoke AI models for everything from facial recognition to checkpoints, to identifying specific Russian vehicle types from drone footage, and quickly modifying commercially available drones for military use, cutting bomb racks, improving communications, enhancing navigation.
It sounds very much like a dynamic, almost chaotic startup ecosystem being applied directly to the urgent demands of national defense.
That's precisely the analogy used frequently in the source materials. And formal structures emerged to support this, like the Brave One Defense Tech Cluster, or incubator, designed to foster and accelerate this kind of innovation. Experts quoted in the analysis note that Ukraine's vibrant commercial tech sector, working hand in glove with the military, has effectively pushed the capabilities of readily available, often commercial-grade technology and AI algorithms right up to a glass ceiling, essentially maximizing what can possibly be achieved with relatively limited cost-effective resources rather than relying on expensive bespoke military hardware for everything.
And the speed is key.
The speed is absolutely crucial. This startup mentality, this decentralized innovation model, allows for unprecedented speed in translating new ideas and battlefield feedback into deployed capabilities. We hear accounts of a new drone modification concept or a software update for a targeting app based on soldier feedback, going from initial idea to being tested and deployed in combat units within a matter of weeks, sometimes even days.
That's unheard of in traditional military procurement.
Completely. This agility, this ability to constantly iterate, adapt, and field solutions faster than the adversary can react, is described again and again in the sources as Ukraine's real secret sauce in the tech domain.
And that speed and agility, combined with the power of AI, leads us right back to that incredible cost asymmetry we saw demonstrated so starkly in the spiderweb strike.
This is perhaps the most tangible and strategically significant demonstration of the asymmetric advantage enabled by AI-guided systems. Let's look at the numbers again. The entire spiderweb operation, including the 18 months of infiltration, building the trucks, deploying the operators, and the cost of the 117 or so drones themselves, likely cost Ukraine only a few million dollars in total, maybe tens of millions at the absolute outside.
A relatively small investment in military terms.
Relatively tiny. Yet, the sources estimate it resulted in up to $7 billion worth of damage to high-value Russian military assets, and potentially destroyed or damaged as much as 34%, over a third of Russia's active strategic bomber fleet, in a single coordinated operation.
It's the classic cheap drone versus expensive hardware dynamic, but amplified massively by the effectiveness of the AI.
Precisely. We're talking about using drones that might cost anywhere from $500 for a basic FPV model modified for attack up to perhaps $10,000 or $20,000, maybe a bit more, for a more advanced, longer-range model with sophisticated onboard AI systems. Using those to reliably destroy strategic aircraft that cost tens or even hundreds of millions of dollars each, it completely flips the economic calculus of attrition warfare.
The AI targeting is the critical enabler there, right? It ensures the cheap drone actually hits and destroys the expensive asset.
Absolutely key. Without the AI-driven precision guidance, those cheap drones might just cause minor damage or miss entirely.
Mm-hmm.
The AI ensures that these low-cost platforms are not just disruptive nuisances, but genuinely lethal threats to even the most valuable targets. And this massive cost asymmetry allows a smaller military, like Ukraine's, to attrit the critical, hard-to-replace assets of a larger one, like Russia's, over time in a way that becomes economically unsustainable for the larger power.
Because replacing those bombers is incredibly expensive and slow for Russia.
Exactly. Each 295 or 222M3 lost is incredibly difficult, time-consuming, and ruinously expensive for Russia to replace, especially under sanctions. Meanwhile, Ukraine's expenditure for the drone that destroyed it is comparatively minimal, and their production or acquisition cycle for more drones is vastly faster. It's a strategically efficient, almost brutally effective way for an underdog to bleed a larger adversary's strength.
Now, you mentioned earlier that Russia obviously has its own AI programs and drone efforts. How does Ukraine's specific approach manage to exploit Russia's relative lag, or perhaps just a different philosophy in adopting these technologies?
That's an important point. While Russia certainly possesses talented scientists and has state-backed programs working on military AI and autonomous systems, their actual implementation and adaptation of these technologies on the battlefield has been notably slower, more cautious, and often more rigid compared to Ukraine's agile approach.
They haven't integrated it as quickly or as widely.
Generally not, based on observations throughout the conflict up to this point. Russian tactics often still rely heavily on mass and brute force, vast artillery barrages, sending waves of relatively unsophisticated Shahed drones primarily to overwhelm defenses through sheer numbers rather than precision. While these traditional tactics can certainly be destructive and effective in their own way, they often lack the surgical precision, the networked intelligence, and the dynamic adaptability demonstrated by Ukraine's AI-enabled approach, particularly in the spiderweb strike. The sources consistently note that as of early 2025, Russia had not demonstrated widespread deployment of truly AI-driven autonomous drones capable of the kind of sophisticated visual navigation, independent target recognition, and pinpoint terminal guidance seen in Ukraine's operation.
Their AI use seems more limited or centralized.
It often appears that way. Russia's AI applications in the military context has frequently been limited to specific, often more centralized functions, or integrated into larger, more expensive platforms, or perhaps kept within experimental units rather than being widely distributed to frontline forces. Their command and control structure also tends to be more hierarchical, more top-down, and generally slower to adapt to rapidly changing battlefield conditions compared to Ukraine's more flexible model. Ukraine seems to have successfully outflanked this more traditional structure by deliberately building a digital-first, more decentralized military ecosystem.
What does that look like in practice?
You hear reports, reflected in the sources, of junior Ukrainian officers and even NCOs on the front lines having access to real-time battlefield intelligence derived from AI analysis, delivered directly to ruggedized tablets or smartphones. They can use intuitive, almost consumer-grade apps to call in and coordinate fire support, including drone strikes, very rapidly. They're empowered by these AI tools in a way that often contrasts sharply with reports from Russian units, where information flow can be slower, more stovepiped, and less integrated across different branches or units.
So it's not just about having the technology, but crucially about how you organize your military forces and integrate that technology throughout the chain of command, right down to the tactical edge.
Exactly. That organizational and cultural adaptation is just as important, if not more so, than the technology itself. Ukraine has effectively transformed significant parts of its military into a networked, highly agile, tech-enabled force capable of rapid learning and adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Russia's much larger, more traditionally structured army has often seemed to struggle to move beyond more established, perhaps more analog, methods of warfare, despite having access to some advanced technology pockets. This stark contrast, which one source memorably described as Kiev outfoxing Moscow's Soviet-era mass with big tech, perfectly encapsulates how asymmetric warfare has evolved in the information age.
That phrase really captures it.
It demonstrates pretty conclusively, I think, that in the 21st century, technological quality, organizational agility, rapid adaptation cycles, and the effective integration of AI and data analytics can indeed outweigh sheer quantity of personnel and traditional heavy hardware in achieving decisive battlefield effects.
So overall, what's the big takeaway from Ukraine's success in leveraging this AI advantage? What does it tell us about modern conflict?
The big takeaway is that Ukraine's success demonstrates a profound, maybe even uncomfortable truth about modern conflict. Smaller or less conventionally powerful actors can now genuinely use emerging technologies, particularly AI, to effectively counter, and in specific crucial domains, perhaps even surpass traditionally stronger foes. The war in Ukraine, and particularly a stunning operation like the spiderweb strike, shows definitively that AI-guided precision strikes, real-time multi-source intelligence fusion, autonomous systems operating in coordinated ways. These are no longer science fiction. They are fundamentally redefining military power as we speak. Traditional metrics counting tanks, planes, ships, soldiers, while still obviously relevant, seem to matter comparatively less when algorithms and network intelligence are driving the fight. When they are identifying critical vulnerabilities with superhuman speed and precision and orchestrating complex attacks with a level of coordination previously impossible. That stark analysis quoted in the sources really resonates here. AI is potentially signaling the end of traditional sources of power. Ukraine's unexpected technological resilience and success story is undeniably reshaping the global understanding of what military superiority actually means in the modern era.
It's a truly rapid and dramatic shift in how we even conceptualize power. And inevitably, this kind of successful, incredibly high-profile demonstration of AI-powered asymmetric capability has major geopolitical ripple effects. It's changing global perceptions of stability, of deterrence, of vulnerability.
This is exactly where the implications of the spiderweb strike move far beyond the immediate battlefield in Ukraine and start to reshape strategic calculations worldwide.
Yeah.
The successful use of relatively low-cost AI-enabled precision strikes to achieve such a high-impact result against a major nuclear power fundamentally alters how nations think about security.
Let's start with that core dynamic, deterrence versus escalation. On the one hand, could this strike actually deter Russia in some way, make them think twice?
It's possible, yes. On one hand, it definitely introduces a new and uncomfortable element of deterrence for Moscow. A high-impact strike deep inside Russia, successfully hitting critical strategic assets like nuclear-capable bombers, achieves using primarily indigenous ingenuity and technology, even if leveraging some Western components or AI platforms, and without needing controversial long-range missiles supplied by allies. That has to force Moscow to reevaluate its own vulnerabilities.
Things they thought were safe are no longer safe.
Exactly. The loss of those bombers highlights that assets previously considered absolutely secure parked hundreds or thousands of kilometers behind the front lines, protected by layers of traditional air defense, are demonstrably no longer safe in the age of AI-enabled drone attacks delivered unconventionally. This newfound vulnerability could, theoretically, strengthen deterrence by making Russia less confident that it can safely concentrate and operate its strategic forces deep within its own territory without risk of significant losses. It creates uncertainty for their planners.
But then there's the flip side, the ever-present danger of escalation.
Absolutely. And it's a huge risk. Striking targets so deep inside Russia, especially after Moscow has publicly and repeatedly declared attacks on its sovereign territory as crossing supposed red lines, carries a significant risk of provoking an unpredictable or severe escalatory response.
How might Russia react?
They might feel compelled to retaliate with unconventional means, perhaps massive cyber attacks or intensified attacks on Ukrainian critical infrastructure, or even considering more drastic military options simply to save face domestically and reassert their perceived deterrence internationally. The sources mentioned that while Russia publicly tried to downplay the damage from the spiderweb strike, likely for narrative management purposes both at home and abroad, internally this operation forces them into very difficult and costly choices.
Like reallocating defenses.
Exactly. Do they pull scarce advanced air defense assets like S-400s away from the front lines in Ukraine, potentially weakening their defenses there to better protect rear area bases? Or do they consider more drastic countermeasures? It creates strategic dilemmas. And there's a broader point here. The fact that relatively low-cost AI-enabled drones can now achieve strategic effects that formerly required very expensive advanced ballistic or cruise missiles effectively lowers the threshold for inflicting significant strategic damage.
Making major attacks easier to contemplate.
Potentially. It introduces a new, unpredictable element into conflict dynamics. If not carefully managed through diplomacy and clear signaling, this lowering of the barrier to entry for high-impact strikes could potentially make future conflicts more prone to sudden, dangerous escalation.
How does this kind of demonstrated capability affect other countries, particularly Russia's neighbors in Eastern Europe and the Baltics?
For those countries, it undoubtedly presents a very complex picture. On the one hand, there might be a certain sense of maybe not relief, but perhaps encouragement. Seeing that innovative tactics and advanced, smartly applied technology can effectively counter a larger, more conventionally powerful aggressor like Russia offers a potentially reassuring precedent. It demonstrates that Russia, despite its size, is not invincible to asymmetric approaches.
But there must be concerns, too.
Oh, absolutely. There's also a significant recognition, likely bordering on alarm, of the inherent destabilizing potential if these kinds of cheap, long-range, precision-strike drone capabilities become more widespread. The thinking goes, if Ukraine can develop and successfully use this technology under wartime pressure, who else might be able to, or who might they share it with?
Leading to a regional arms race.
It could certainly trigger a regional ripple effect. We might see neighboring countries rapidly accelerating their own investments in drone technology, military AI applications, and counter-drone systems. Nations in the region that have traditionally relied heavily on collective defense guarantees, like NATO's Article 5, might now perceive a much more pressing need to develop their own robust, agile, perhaps domestically produced drone deterrent capabilities as a national priority. They can't just wait for help. They need their own asymmetric tools.
And beyond state actors, what about potential adversaries or even non-state groups, terrorists?
This is consistently flagged in the sources as a major, perhaps the most pressing long-term concern stemming from demonstrations like this. There's a significant and very understandable fear that adversarial states, maybe rogue nations, and even sophisticated non-state terrorist organizations could attempt to imitate Ukraine's methods. The blueprint is now out there, in a sense.
The nightmare scenario is AI-guided swarms against civilian infrastructure.
Exactly. The prospect of similar AI-guided swarm tactics, perhaps using even simpler drones, being employed against critical civilian infrastructure in other countries, power grids, water supplies, transportation hubs, financial centers, government buildings, is a very real fear. It's moved from theoretical to demonstrably possible on a large scale, proven effective against even military targets.
Forcing governments everywhere to react.
It puts immediate, urgent pressure on governments worldwide to drastically enhance their counter-drone security measures. We are almost certainly already seeing, and will continue to see, a major surge in global demand for advanced anti-drone technologies. Things like sophisticated electronic jammers, directed energy weapons like lasers, kinetic interceptors like net guns or specialized munitions, and yes, potentially widespread development and deployment of automated AI-guided counter-drone turrets, perhaps inspired directly by Ukraine's Sky Sentinel system. Militaries and civilian security agencies globally are suddenly realizing just how exposed their fixed assets and critical infrastructure might be to this new generation of threat.
This strike also forces its way into critical international discussions, doesn't it, about the very nature of force, the role of technology, and the future of warfare norms.
Absolutely. It injects new urgency and forces a reckoning in diplomatic circles and international forums dealing with arms control, international humanitarian law, and the future of conflict.
How is the Western response, particularly from Ukraine's key allies, being viewed through this specific lens, according to the sources?
Publicly, Western governments generally maintain strong support for Ukraine's fundamental right to self-defense under international law. Strikes against legitimate military targets within Russia, like air bases launching attacks on Ukraine, are typically viewed as permissible within that framework.
But perhaps some private nervousness.
There is likely, and the sources strongly suggest this, some significant private unease among allies about the potential escalation risks posed by such deep, high-profile strikes inside Russia. You could imagine intense behind-the-scenes diplomatic conversations urging Ukraine to perhaps exercise caution, to carefully consider the frequency, timing, and targets of such operations, to try and manage potential reactions from Moscow and avoid unintended wider conflict. It's a delicate balancing act. On a potentially more positive note regarding the evolution of warfare norms, Ukraine's apparent focus in this specific spiderweb strike solely on military assets, the bombers, the support aircraft, the airfield infrastructure, and seemingly avoiding civilian targets, is significant.
Maintaining distinction.
Yes. It demonstrates that even when employing powerful new technologies like AI-guided drones, the fundamental principles of distinction, targeting only combatants and military objectives, and proportionality, ensuring collateral damage isn't excessive relative to military advantage, which are central to international humanitarian law, can still be maintained. This could set a potentially important precedent, influencing future discussions and norms around the responsible development and use of autonomous or semi-autonomous weapon systems. It shows capability doesn't have to mean indiscriminate use.
And that detail, we keep coming back to the report that human operators were still in the loop for each drone in the spiderweb strike. Does that specific detail have implications for the ongoing ethical norms debate about lethal autonomous weapons?
Yes, absolutely, and it's a critically important detail in that context. The fact that such a large-scale, technologically sophisticated, AI-enabled operation was reportedly conducted with this layer of human oversight, suggesting that the final lethal decision likely required a human operator's confirmation or active supervision for each drone. That might significantly strengthen arguments being made within international forums, like the UN Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons, CCW discussions, for maintaining meaningful human control over the use of lethal force by autonomous systems.
It shows it's possible even in complex operations.
It can be presented that way, yes. The success of this strike, while undeniably demonstrating the incredible power and potential of military AI, can also be leveraged by advocates who argue that humans must retain ultimate moral agency and control over life and death decisions in warfare. This real-world example could potentially give renewed momentum to calls for establishing clear global agreements or binding norms on AI and warfare, perhaps focusing specifically on limiting or even banning fully autonomous lethal weapon systems laws that can select and engage targets without any human intervention. The perceived need for AI arms control is likely to increase significantly after events like this.
This level of demonstrated capability clearly forces a fundamental rethink of traditional military doctrine as well, especially when it comes to deterrence theory.
Without a doubt. Traditional deterrence models, developed largely during the Cold War, were based primarily on the concept of mutually assured destruction, MAD, through nuclear weapons. or relying on large, visible conventional forces, massive armies, fleets of tanks, air forces, navies, to dissuade an adversary through the credible threat of overwhelming destructive power or invasion.
But this AI strike seems different.
It is different. Ukraine has just demonstrated a powerful new form of what some are calling algorithmic deterrence. This involves using networked intelligence, surgical precision, and operational speed, all dramatically enhanced by AI, to inflict strategic-level damage and hold an adversary's high-value assets at risk, using relatively minimal, perhaps even deniable, means. This suggests that nations will increasingly look to their AI capabilities, their ability to collect and process data, guide munitions precisely, coordinate complex operations autonomously as a core component of their national deterrent posture, alongside traditional military forces.
So deterrence becomes less about sheer numbers and more about technological sophistication.
It seems to be heading that way. Knowing that an adversary possesses the demonstrated ability to deploy swarms of precise, autonomous drones capable of penetrating even deep defenses and reliably hitting critical infrastructure or strategic assets, that knowledge could potentially deter certain aggressive actions just as effectively, maybe even more effectively in some scenarios, than knowing they simply possess a certain number of tanks or missiles.
But there's a problem there, isn't there? If you can't easily verify or count an adversary's AI capabilities in the same way you can count their tanks or missiles through satellite photos or inspections, doesn't that introduce a dangerous level of instability into the deterrence equation?
That is a huge potential problem, yes. It certainly could introduce instability. Because AI capabilities are often embedded in software, algorithms, and training data, they are inherently less visible, less tangible, and much harder to quantify through traditional intelligence gathering or arms control verification methods compared to traditional military hardware.
Making it harder to gauge the threat accurately.
Exactly. This introduces a significant new level of uncertainty, ambiguity, and potential for misperception into the delicate calculus of deterrence. An opponent might drastically misjudge or underestimate another nation's true AI capabilities, or perhaps overestimate their own defenses against such capabilities. This increases the risk of miscalculations, flawed assumptions, and potentially unintended escalations, especially during tense crises.
Leading to calls for new forms of arms control.
Precisely. This inherent uncertainty is why some strategists and policymakers are now urgently calling for the development of new confidence-building measures, transparency initiatives, or perhaps even formal arms control treaties specifically designed to address military AI. Similar in principle to the arms control frameworks painstakingly developed during the Cold War to manage nuclear risks, the idea is to find ways to increase predictability, reduce misunderstanding, and maintain strategic stability in this rapidly evolving technological landscape. It's a huge challenge.
Okay, so summing up this section on the geopolitical fallout. The spiderweb strike and the AI capabilities it showcased are fundamentally reshaping regional security dynamics and global deterrence calculations.
They demonstrate how emerging technology can potentially empower smaller states and perhaps enhance deterrence against conventional aggression. But they also simultaneously introduce significant new risks of escalation, miscalculation, and dangerous proliferation.
And in the immediate context of the war in Ukraine.
In the immediate context, this strike has undeniably put Russia on the strategic defensive in ways it likely didn't anticipate, potentially altering the operational balance and forcing difficult resource allocation decisions. But looking longer term, militaries, intelligence agencies, and diplomats around the entire world are watching these developments with intense focus. They are absorbing these lessons, and this will inevitably influence future military planning, defense budgets, alliance structures, and international negotiations around technology, arms control, and the very nature of conflict for years, probably decades to come.
It's clear this single event is being studied intensely, dissected in every defense ministry and war college around the globe right now. And that brings us perfectly to the final major points the sources raise. This accelerating global AI arms race that seems to be kicking into high gear and the fundamental reshaping of the future of warfare itself.
That's the trajectory we're definitively on now, yes. The dramatic, undeniable success of an operation like the spiderweb strike sends an absolutely unmistakable signal to every nation with military ambitions or security concerns. AI in warfare is no longer theoretical. It's no longer confined to laboratories or niche applications. It's real, it's demonstrably effective even against major powers, and it's now clearly a critical, maybe the critical component of modern military power and national security. This realization has essentially put militaries around the world into a competitive high-stakes race to adapt.
A race with two sides, right? Developing similar capabilities and developing counters.
Exactly. A dual race, trying to develop similar offensive AI-enabled capabilities for themselves while simultaneously scrambling to develop effective defenses and countermeasures against potential adversaries using the same technologies against them.
What's the observed response been like from the major players? Let's start with the United States and its NATO allies. How are they reacting?
Well, Western militaries, including the U.S. and key NATO allies, were already investing significantly in military AI research and autonomous systems development before this. But Ukraine's battlefield experience, culminating in events like Spiderweb, has acted as a powerful validator and a major accelerator for these efforts. They're deeply, intensely studying Ukraine's innovative tactics, particularly the effective use of distributed drone swarms, the integration of commercial tech, and crucially, how AI has been woven into their command, control, intelligence, and targeting processes, C3IT.
Are there specific programs being boosted?
Yes. The U.S., for example, had already launched high-profile initiatives like the Department of Defense's Replicator Program, which explicitly aims to field thousands of attritable autonomous systems, essentially, swarms of relatively inexpensive drones, specifically to counter potential pacing threats like China's growing military might. Ukraine's vivid demonstration of how relatively cheap AI-guided drones can successfully penetrate defenses and strike high-value targets like strategic bombers will almost certainly increase the sense of urgency, the political backing, and the funding allocated to programs like Replicator. It proves the concept works in the real world.
So more investment in drone swarms and AI.
We can absolutely expect NATO countries to significantly ramp up investment in developing sophisticated swarm control AI, advanced algorithms for multi-domain autonomous coordination, integrating air, sea, ground, and potentially space-based drones seamlessly, and building more resilient, hardened communication networks, drawing direct lessons from Ukraine's effective and innovative use of systems like Starlink, even under intense electronic attack. There's also, as we touched on, an extremely urgent focus now on bolstering the physical defenses of their own military bases and critical infrastructure.
Learning from Russia's vulnerability.
Directly. Witnessing the surprising vulnerability of seemingly well-protected Russian strategic airfields has been a major wake-up call for U.S. and European air forces. They are urgently reassessing the security posture of their own vital air bases. This will likely lead to increased deployment of advanced multispectral sensors, more rapid-fire close-in weapon systems, CIWS, like Phalanx or Goalkeeper, deployment of more powerful and adaptive electronic jammers, and almost certainly the development and fielding of their own AI-assisted counter-drone gun or laser turret systems, perhaps taking direct inspiration from Ukraine's Psi Sentinel.
So Ukraine is becoming a model?
In many ways, yes. Ukraine's agile, tech-savvy, adaptive approach is increasingly being seen, particularly within NATO, as a potential model for digital age warfare. NATO is actively integrating these lessons learned into its joint doctrine, its training exercises, and its capability development priorities. A concrete example cited in the sources is the UK Ministry of Defense signing a major new contract with Palantir specifically to integrate more AI capabilities across its armed forces, with the announcement explicitly linking the decision to the observed impact of such technologies in the Ukraine conflict.
Okay, so the West is essentially fast-tracking its own military AI development and defensive measures based directly on the lessons emerging from Ukraine. What about Russia's reaction? How are they responding to this wake-up call?
For Russia, this strike was undoubtedly a significant and likely deeply unwelcome wake-up call. While elements within the Russian military leadership and its defense industry have long advocated for greater investment in autonomy and AI, this event provides stark, undeniable evidence of the strategic necessity and the potential consequences of falling behind in this domain.
So what are they doing about it?
In the immediate short term, Russia is almost certainly pouring resources into bolstering its counter-drone capabilities, particularly around high-value strategic assets. We are likely seeing a surge in the deployment of advanced electronic warfare, EW units, around key bases and command centers, increased use of mobile, radar-equipped anti-drone vehicles or systems, and potentially the physical relocation of strategic bombers and other critical assets to more dispersed, perhaps more remote, or better hardened locations to reduce their vulnerability to surprise attack.
Trying to make them harder targets.
Exactly. In a longer term, this event will undoubtedly accelerate Russia's own research and development efforts for both offensive drones and the AI that guides them, as well as for missiles. They have existing programs, reportedly working with some domestic startups and research institutes despite Western sanctions, aimed at developing autonomous swarm coordination capabilities and improving AI-powered guidance for their munitions. We can anticipate them trying to field new generations of their Lancet loitering drones with enhanced image recognition and autonomy, attempting to develop their own large-scale drone swarms, perhaps learning from both Ukrainian and Chinese concepts. A major focus will likely be on integrating more advanced AI capabilities into their existing larger UAV platforms, such as giving their Orlan reconnaissance drones or their Orion Strike UAVs improved autonomous targeting capabilities or greater resilience to jamming.
So they are definitely trying to close that perceived technology gap with Ukraine in the specific area of AI-enabled asymmetric warfare.
Yes, they are absolutely in a catch-up race now. They've been forced into it. They're also fundamentally rethinking how to protect their most valuable military assets from these new threats. Things like greater dispersal of aircraft on airfields, building more hardened aircraft shelters, which is expensive and slow, deploying more sophisticated decoys and camouflage, using fake inflatable targets, and implementing protocols for more frequent movement of critical mobile assets. These are likely to become standard operating procedures to try and counter AI-based targeting systems, which are particularly effective at identifying static targets or predictable patterns.
Are there other potential Russian responses?
Domestically, it's possible that hardliners within the Russian security establishment could use an incident like this to justify calls for further escalation in Ukraine, or perhaps for more aggressive cyber operations aimed at degrading Ukraine's digital command infrastructure, or disrupting their crucial access to satellite communication systems like Starlink. Essentially, the spiderweb strike has forced Russia onto the technological and strategic defensive in this specific domain in a way that represents a significant shift from the power dynamic seen in the early stages of the war.
Okay, and what about China? China is often discussed as a major global competitor, even a leader, in AI development generally. How are they likely interpreting these events in Ukraine?
China is observing this conflict, and especially Ukraine's highly innovative use of AI and drones, with extremely close interest. You can be sure of that. Their military strategists and technologists likely see Ukraine's success, particularly the effectiveness of distributed AI-guided strikes, as powerful real-world validation of their own significant long-term state investments in drone swarms, military AI, and autonomous systems over the past decade or more.
China has already demonstrated swarm capabilities, haven't they?
Yes. China has publicly demonstrated large-scale drone swarm capabilities in exercises several times. Seeing a real-world, high-impact application of these underlying concepts against a major, sophisticated military like Russia's will undoubtedly reinforce their strategic commitment to these technologies. They will be meticulously analyzing every available detail of the spiderweb operation: how Ukraine's drones penetrated defenses, how the long-range coordination was maintained, the specific effectiveness of the AI targeting algorithms, the counter-EW techniques used. And they'll be doing this analysis with a sharp eye towards potential future conflict scenarios that concern them, particularly any scenario involving Taiwan, where similar asymmetric tactics might be employed.
So we can expect China to accelerate its own programs?
We can fully expect China to double down on developing robust, highly autonomous, AI-powered weapon systems. This likely includes increasingly sophisticated autonomous targeting systems that are perhaps even less reliant on external signals like GPS or continuous communication links than what Ukraine demonstrated, aiming for true fire, forget, and find capabilities hardened against jamming. Diplomatically, it's also possible that China may try to leverage incidents like this to push international narratives about the perceived dangers and instability caused by AI in warfare, perhaps promoting the urgency of international arms control discussions, even while it continues to vigorously develop its own advanced capabilities behind the scenes. It's a complex posture.
And the impact beyond the big three: U.S., Russia, China.
Regionally, particularly in Asia, countries like Japan, South Korea, India, and Pakistan are also undoubtedly taking very careful notes. For India and Pakistan, nuclear-armed rivals with ongoing border tensions, the demonstrated ability of AI-enabled strikes to credibly threaten high-value strategic forces could significantly alter their existing strategic stability calculations and deterrence dynamics. It might potentially spur a more intense regional AI arms race in South Asia, layered on top of their existing nuclear competition.
It really sounds like this technology, demonstrated so effectively, is set to proliferate globally, and maybe quite quickly.
That is a major, urgent, and deeply concerning implication highlighted across the sources. Beyond the major military powers, other states, and worryingly, even capable non-state actors, are learning rapidly from Ukraine's battlefield experience. Countries like Iran, which has already become a significant supplier of simpler drone technology to Russia and various proxy groups, will almost certainly accelerate their efforts to incorporate more advanced autonomy and AI targeting capabilities into their drone designs, aiming to make them more effective, more survivable, and harder to counter.
And the risk extends beyond states.
Yes. Other regional powers and potentially well-resourced non-state groups are seeing that relatively simple, often commercially available drone components, when combined with clever open-source software, readily available AI development kits, and innovative tactics, can potentially grant them significant military power projection capabilities that were previously available only to wealthy, technologically advanced nations.
That lowering the barrier to entry for strategic impact?
Exactly. That low barrier to entry for developing potentially strategically impactful drone capabilities is a critical risk factor going forward. It fundamentally democratizes, in a potentially dangerous way, the ability to wield significant military power. This reality may force Western nations and others to seriously consider implementing much stricter export controls on certain types of advanced sensors, processing chips, or even specific AI software algorithms and training data sets that could be easily weaponized or repurposed.
Is international regulation feasible?
It's incredibly difficult, but there's now an urgent need for serious international discussions within forums like the United Nations, or perhaps revisiting the framework of the Geneva Conventions to specifically address the profound implications of autonomous weapons and AI in warfare before these capabilities proliferate too widely and become uncontrollable. The stark lesson emerging from the Ukraine conflict is that simply ignoring this technology or hoping it won't be developed or weaponized is not a viable strategy. The reality is that early adopters gain a significant, perhaps even decisive, military edge. Ignoring it means falling behind.
So, stepping back, the very future of warfare itself is being fundamentally rewritten by these events right now in real time.
It absolutely is. Concepts that were being debated in academic papers, think tank reports, and military labs just a few short years ago.
Uh-huh.
Things like autonomous drone swarms, true human-machine teaming in combat, algorithmic warfare driving targeting cycles, AI-powered autonomous precision targeting. These are now proven, effective operational realities, demonstrated on a large scale in a high-intensity conflict between major states.
What can we anticipate seeing more of in future conflicts?
Based on these trends, we can anticipate that future conflicts between modern or modernizing armies will likely feature AI-driven precision strikes as a standard element, perhaps dominating the opening phases of hostilities. They will almost certainly involve sophisticated cyber and electronic warfare battles aimed specifically at disrupting or disabling an adversary's AI systems, communication networks, and digital infrastructure. And they will likely increasingly involve more decentralized military forces, leveraging autonomy, allowing smaller, more agile units to operate effectively, perhaps deep within enemy territory, against larger, more traditional opponents.
The old rules seem to be changing fast.
The goalposts for military planners globally have undeniably been moved by this war, and especially by demonstrations like the spiderweb strike. It shows conclusively how asymmetric capabilities, when dramatically enhanced and enabled by artificial intelligence, can pose a decisive challenge, perhaps even checkmate, traditional sources of military power based purely on mass or legacy platforms. The sources strongly suggest, as we've discussed, that AI is rapidly becoming as strategically significant as nuclear weapons once were in terms of its potential impact on deterrence, power projection, and the fundamental calculus of war and peace. Though, hopefully, without the uniquely catastrophic consequences associated with nuclear use.
It sounds like the world's militaries are not just entering, but are already deep within a global AI arms race, scrambling to catch up, adapt, or stay ahead.
That's the reality, yes. This long-range drone strike on Russian bases isn't just a single tactical event, however dramatic. It's a profound strategic data point. It's a case study that will be analyzed, debated, and learned from in war colleges, intelligence agencies, and foreign ministries for decades to come. It provides undeniable battlefield-proven evidence of how artificial intelligence is fundamentally transforming the nature of asymmetric warfare and, as a direct and unavoidable consequence, reshaping global geopolitical stability, deterrence dynamics, and the very future of conflict in the 21st century.
And this intense focus on the technology, the tactics, the geopolitics, it inevitably brings us to some truly critical questions that go beyond all that. The profound ethical and practical implications raised by the widespread adoption of AI in warfare.
These are indeed the big, unavoidable questions. This is where we have to shift our focus from the technical, how did they do it, to the much deeper human and societal questions of what does this all mean for us? Events like the spiderweb strike force everyone, not just specialists, to confront the complex debate around the risks and the potential benefits of autonomous weapons systems head-on.
What are some of the potential benefits that advocates of these technologies often highlight? Why pursue them?
Well, proponents often point to the potential for significantly increased precision offered by AI targeting systems. The argument is that this could potentially lead to a reduction in unintended civilian casualties compared to less discriminate weapon systems or the risk of human error under the extreme stress of combat.
Reducing collateral damage through better accuracy.
That's the hope, yes. They also frequently emphasize the potential to reduce risk to one's own human soldiers by using autonomous or remotely operated systems for extremely dangerous tasks, like reconnaissance in heavily defended areas, breaching minefields, or operating in chemically or biologically contaminated environments, taking the human out of harm's way.
And the speed factor.
And there's the argument about speed of reaction. Algorithms can process information, analyze threats, and potentially initiate defensive actions far faster than human reflexes allow. This could be crucial in defending against hypersonic missiles or overwhelming swarm attacks, bypassing potentially fatal human delays in critical, time-sensitive battlefield situations.
Okay, those are the potential upsides, but the sources also raise very significant risks and ethical concerns. What are the main ones?
There are indeed significant risks and profound ethical concerns that are absolutely central to this ongoing global debate. A major one is the potential for unintended consequences arising from algorithmic error or inherent biases in the AI's training data.
What if the AI gets it wrong?
Exactly. What if the AI misidentifies a target, especially in complex, cluttered urban environments or rapidly changing battlefield situations where context is everything? Could it mistake a civilian vehicle for a military one or fail to recognize signs of surrender? Then there's the fundamental ethical question. Should we delegate the irreversible decision to use lethal force, to take a human life, to a machine, to an algorithm? Does this inherently lower the moral threshold for initiating conflict if killing becomes perceived as less direct, less personal?
The accountability problem.
And that leads directly to the immensely difficult question of accountability. If an autonomous weapon system makes a mistake that results in unlawful killing or excessive civilian casualties, who is ultimately responsible?
Is it the programmer who wrote the code? The commander who deployed the system? The manufacturer? Or is the machine itself somehow accountable, which seems nonsensical? Establishing legal and moral accountability becomes incredibly challenging. We also talked quite a bit about the proliferation risk earlier. How does that feed into this ethical debate? Should we ultimately fear the spread of these potentially cheap yet powerful AI warfare tools, seeing them arm more actors globally? Or, playing devil's advocate, is there a credible argument that their precision and lower cost could paradoxically enhance deterrence for smaller states facing potential aggression from larger neighbors? Could they even theoretically be used responsibly in peacekeeping missions to monitor ceasefires or protect civilians with less risk to peacekeepers?
That is a deeply complex and highly divisive aspect of the debate, and the world is really just beginning to grapple with its implications seriously. Does the potential positive outcome, say, a smaller democratic nation being able to effectively deter invasion from a larger authoritarian neighbor using cost-effective, precise AI-enabled defensive systems, does that potential benefit outweigh the significant tangible risk of these same capabilities falling into the wrong hands, being used irresponsibly by non-state actors? Or simply lowering the overall global threshold for conflict initiation by making potent military power more accessible? There are strong arguments on both sides.
And let's revisit that crucial point, reportedly from the spiderweb strike, about the human in the loop. How do you see that line, the division of responsibility and control between human decision-making and AI autonomy evolving as AI capabilities inevitably continue to increase, becoming faster and more complex?
That is perhaps the most pressing ethical and practical question we face regarding the future trajectory of military AI. It's the crux of the matter. The sources indicated apparent human oversight was present, at least to some degree, in this particular Ukrainian operation, which, as we noted, is seen by some observers as a positive precedent or model. But the question is, what happens next? As AI systems become even more capable, able to process sensory data, analyze situations, and make complex tactical calculations in real time at speeds far exceeding human cognitive abilities, how will that line between human control and machine autonomy inevitably shift?
Will humans be able to keep up?
That's the concern. Where should that line ultimately be drawn, ethically and legally, specifically for the authorization and execution of lethal force? At what point does an AI system become so fast, so complex, so autonomous in its decision-making cycle that a human supervisor is no longer truly in the loop, providing active control or meaningful judgment, but merely on the loop? Essentially just monitoring, or worse, rubber-stamping AI decisions they may not fully understand, cannot fully interrogate, or might not be able to effectively override in time if something goes wrong.
Meaningful human control.
Achieving and maintaining meaningful human control over the use of lethal force in increasingly autonomous systems is the central challenge at the heart of all international debates trying to regulate laws. Defining what meaningful means in practice, especially as the technology advances, is incredibly difficult.
It's clear these technologies raise incredibly difficult questions, profound questions, with absolutely no easy answers on the horizon. For you listening right now, what stands out the most from hearing about these implications? Is it the potential promise of greater precision and reduced risk to soldiers? Is it the chilling fear of autonomous error and the black box problem? Is it the deep challenge of holding anyone accountable when algorithms make lethal mistakes? Or is it that fundamental question of where humanity must draw the line and insist on retaining control over the power to kill?
Events like the spiderweb strike, as technologically fascinating as they are, ultimately force all of us, not just military planners, diplomats, and ethicists, to confront these deep, uncomfortable questions about the future trajectory of conflict and the role we want artificial intelligence to play within it.
So we've taken a really deep dive today. We started with a stunning, almost unbelievable long-range drone strike that grabbed global attention for its audacity and effectiveness. We've meticulously unpacked the complex AI technology, the visual navigation, the target recognition, the autonomous homing, and the innovative, even daring clandestine tactics like the Trojan trucks that made it possible. We've explored its profound impact as a game-changing asymmetric force multiplier for Ukraine, demonstrating vividly how technological quality and agility can indeed outfox quantitative superiority in modern warfare. And we've delved into the significant far-reaching global ripple effects this single event is already causing, from clearly sparking an accelerating AI arms race among major powers to fundamentally reshaping international diplomacy around arms control and forcing us all to confront critical ethical questions about the very future of warfare itself.
It truly is a story that goes far beyond just military hardware and tactics. It highlights incredible human ingenuity and adaptability under extreme pressure. And it underscores the utterly transformative and potentially disruptive power of technology when applied creatively in conflict.
It really does. And reflecting on everything we've discussed based on these sources, it leaves us with a compelling, perhaps even unsettling, final thought to ponder. If AI is now fundamentally redefining who possesses effective military power and how quickly and precisely that power can be projected across vast distances, regardless of traditional geographic barriers, are we now entering an age where algorithms themselves are becoming the new weapons of mass strategic significance? And if so, what does that ultimately mean for the long-term prospect of maintaining peace and stability in a world increasingly armed with these powerful, often invisible, and rapidly evolving capabilities?
It's a future that's being built right now, whether we're ready or not. And understanding the events that are driving it, like this remarkable spiderweb strike, is absolutely the essential first step in attempting to navigate that future responsibly.
Keep exploring these crucial questions. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.